So yeah, we have a special session today, and so thanks for coming to this workshop. So basically, I think DevCon is also a good time for us to explain to you and share with you people we met during this year, and which projects we were working on, and basically to do an update on our job. And the thing is that last year we met kind of a lot of people. We had this release planning initiative, release planning framework, and that was a good opportunity to just meet developer and work with developer for building plugins. So this workshop is focused a bit on the release plugin, but we also worked a lot with the Grid team. For having like a Remix desktop application. And we had also some nice talk with Christian, which is just over there. So yeah. So I will go quickly around with the schedule today. So I will do first a quick introduction. Let me fix that. Okay, that's a cable everywhere. So I will go around just a quick introduction on Remix, but I guess some of you already know it or used it. So who here already used it? Can you just... Yeah. Was that good? So maybe I can just skip the first part. So then, Ryan is here. He's part of the Grid team. And basically, we work with the Grid team for having this Remix desktop app. And then it was also a good opportunity to see how we can integrate Remix with Grid, so for having like a better dev environment for developers. So we will talk about that. Then we have Christian Reisbissner here. So I think you might have already talked about this in the previous workshop. Everything is about publishing data and source code to APFS and then verifying it. So Christian will talk about how we plan to have distributed at least contracted verifier. I think that's a big step that we have to reach at some point. Then we have the famous how to build Remix in 5 minutes. So there is no 5 minutes here because I'm not sure it will. It will. Okay. So basically, it's very easy now to develop plugins. And then we want to share with you how to do that and how it can be now easy to develop and to test plugins in Linux. So moving towards the plugins framework, we would like to present to you two plugins that we were developing with developers. So we have the Socrates plugins. I think you might already know about Socrates. It's basically Zeekin's NARC on Ethereum. And we have now a plugin that dev can use for writing Socrates code and for testing it and for deploying it and for basically doing all the stack of the use of Zeekin's NARC on Remix then. And then, since 4 months, we are also a lot working on workshops, and we have now a plugin which can be used for creating and for doing workshop. So Chris Ward will explain us a bit what is this plugin, and then how this plugin can be kind of integrated inside all the educational stuff that we are doing in the EF. And then, so, and then we'll have a brainstorm session with nice people that are here now. Thanks for coming. Rob Stupé, Jane Pitt, Alex Bonnethan, Felix Lange, Edson Akalam, Escala, sorry, François Gesambert here, and Nick Jorgitam. So basically, we have this plugin initiative framework, which is quite centralized now. So we are deciding which plugin can get in and which plugin should get out and we are auditing the code, and basically we are maintaining everything, and we don't want to do that for long, so we want to find a way to centralize this. So the question is, should we keep it centralized? Should we decentralize it? And how, with who? And there is a bunch of questions we need to answer with that. So yeah, we will try to figure out maybe one step today. So thanks. So do I need to do the first part? No? Yeah, so who does not know Remix at all? Okay, so thanks. So let's move to the second part then. And yeah, Brian, please. Yeah, so. So it's Grid and Remix.
So my name is Ryan, I'm from the Grid team. Grid is a new project this year. We were working on Mist, and Grid is kind of an evolution of the developer experience. So we like to think of Grid as bringing Ethereum to your OS, and what we wanted to do is, with all these kind of CLI-based apps, build a unified UX that developers can rely on to run Ethereum tools and nodes that make things a little easier. I think we've all experienced between running Geth and Parity, like the flags are different and you always have to turn toward the documentation. So this is kind of how it's, introduce it. Simple as that. So when you start Grid, it starts as a menu bar app. If you don't have it installed, any of the plugins, when you turn it on, there's a one-click start that downloads the release. This is what Grid looks like. The About page starts with links to documentation and information about the plugin. We have a version list that we're really excited about that helps you kind of switch between different versions really quickly.
Can we turn around to speaker, maybe?
Turn around.
Yeah, there's feedback.
The whole bit.
Should I stand somewhere else?
I think it's cables.
Better? Yeah, a little less? Okay. It's okay. I can talk about that. So with Grid, we tried to build like sensible defaults. You saw kind of the settings page that we went through. It helps you kind of understand the kind of range of the features and functionality. And then when you turn it on, this is the terminal console output, all in one place. And then at the top, we have a node indicator that kind of tells you where your node is, the syncing status, what block you're on, to give you like a visualization of where you're at. So we like to think of Grid kind of a mix between like an app store and a launch pad, meaning app store is around discovery, securely installing, knowing where things come from, making sure checksums are proper. Launchpad, easy to configure, zero friction to run, all like in one place in one home. The ecosystem's evolved a lot. You know, we started with just a few different types of nodes and clients, and now there's lots and lots. So Grid is based around plugins, there's a plugin architecture, and you know, as you saw through the preview, kind of. These are all the types of things that we are trying to bring into one unified interface to make kind of the developer experience easier and more unified. These are some of the plugins we have now. And now I'll do a little demonstration of how Grid can make working with Remix a lot easier. We actually initially developed Remix as a Grid app, but then when they wanted to develop their own Remix standalone app, we thought it was a really great way to kind of show the interoperability between these things. So, in Grid, down here for this demo, we're using the flags dev to connect Remix to a Grid get dev instance, opening the RPC API, and then also opening up the, with this here, we're opening up the debug set of endpoints so we can step through and see. So we'll turn on Geth. We're also going to turn on IPFS because Remix has some great IPFS integrations. So here, daemon is ready. So our goal with Grid was to, you know, just clicking these switches is a lot easier than going to the terminal and remembering, kind of bring up documentation, remembering all the things you have to configure. With Grid, everything's kind of saved, so in your previous state, you just open it back up and you're back where you're at. So this is the Remix desktop app. It's new. Electron based, and it's really great to have Remix kind of in a format where you can open on your desktop. So, first I'll show deploying this contract, the example ballot contract, to the developer instance of Geth that we started in Grid. So now I'll show how you can, so when we started Geth, one of the settings we had was to open up the RPC API, so here we'll use the Web3 provider to connect to the default port, 8545. It's now connected, and then if we were to deploy the contract, here, so it went through, if you go back to Grid, see in the terminal here, so mind to block with that transaction. Show the debug interface. So if we set a delegate, and then move to the debug down in the bottom here. So here you can see Remix in its debugging mode now talking to Geth, and you can walk through the code and see the status for each. So that's exciting. And then kind of as a last step, if you wanted to publish your contract details on IPFS here, publish on IPFS. Right now, the way the app is set up is it'll publish to the Jira gateways, the IPFS server held at in the Berlin office, and also if you're running a local node, it'll publish to a local node. So now if we go, get that patch to show that it's now being hosted on my local node that I've started with Grid, you can do. So what this shows here is that in your local references of your hashes, it has the contract details. So, yeah, that's good.
Good, thanks. So, please, Christian, can you go? So now we take a look at how this contract verifier can work. We need something?
A browser?
Okay, then we can.
Sure. Can you just show me how this is?
Yeah.
So you just use the button, publish on this forum, publish here, that's correct. The thing is, it's a tiny button, but it's part of a big mission. And the big mission is to make Libtaris happy, who's sitting here. Because almost 4 years ago, the first thing he did in the Ethereum space was developing a feature for the Solidity compiler that no one is using. And I want to change that. Okay, how do I switch application to this one?
You can use that laptop.
Can I use that browser here? When I click on it, are there any? So this is a condensed version of a longer talk I gave at Ethereum Meetup some time ago.
Almost there.
What is Footscreen shortcut here in this problem?
F11?
Oh, that was fast. Okay, I'll skip some stuff here. And so, when you are using MetaMask currently to confirm a transaction, to sign a transaction, it shows a screen like that. And it's terrible. It has been planned from the very beginning to show something very different here, but as I said, this has not happened. So you know why it's terrible, right? Or don't you think it's terrible?
Terrible.
Okay, good. Because these are the reasons why it's terrible. Okay, and so the way to change this is bytecode metadata, and this is one of the things that are published in Remix when you click on this publish IPFS, publish on Swarm. And it has been a feature of Solidity since 0.4.7, and it's mostly unused, as I said. And so if you take a look at the contract bytecode, then the end of the deployed bytecode always contains this metadata hash. It's not at the end here, because that's not the deployed bytecode, that's the creation bytecode, which also contains the constructor parameters at the end. And if you, so this is a so-called CBOR encoded data, And if you decode it, it decodes into this here. So it contains a swarm hash and the version of the Solidity compiler, binary or kind of byte encoded. The first byte is the major version, the second byte is the minor version, the third byte is the patch version. So only looking at the bytecode, you already know what the Solidity version used to compile this was. But more important is this swarm hash we have here. In the future, this will also be an IPFS hash, but currently we're using swarm. And if you follow this hash to the file it hashes from, you get the so-called metadata. And it contains the full version of the compiler, the language used, it contains the full ABI of the contract, it contains the developer documentation, and it contains the user documentation, also known as Ethereum Natural Language Specification NetSpec. This is an example where, it's a function called renounce ownership. I think it's from ENS. And the documentation says renouncing to ownership will leave the contract without. So it tells you what the function does if you call it. And that is the string that has to be shown to the user when they sign the transaction. And the ABI that is also there allows you to decode to take this long hex string and decode into values that make sense to the user. There's even more. Namely, all the things you need to have to recompile the smart contract. All the settings that went into the compiler when it was run. Also hashes to the source files that were used. So the catch-up hash, the swarm hash, and the IP of the set. That's what I just said. So the problem is that we have all this data, it is cross-linked, but the problem is it is not available. People do not publish it. And even if they publish it, for example, using this button in Remix, publish to Swarm, publish to IPFS, it will not stay there because Swarm and IPFS are not there yet to keep files. And because of that, I want to start an initiative to create a service that just keeps those files on IPFS. So all the source codes that are correspond to deploy contract on the Ethereum chain. And once you have that service and once this data is available, you can run this tiny script here. And you don't see that the script is tiny, but it is. And when it runs, you give it the address of a smart contract. That's the first hex string. And the second hex string are the parameters that are, for example, shown in MetaMask. And then it first retrieves the bytecode. From the bytecode, it retrieves this metadata hash. Then it retrieves the actual metadata file from Swarm. And in that file, there are IPFS and Swarm links to the source code. It retrieves the source code. And then it downloads the matching compiler that was used when this contract was compiled. It recompiles everything, checks that it results in exactly the same bytecode. And then it takes a look at the data that is present as the second string here and looks up the function that is called in the NutSpec and the ABI and tells you what it will do. And so this is the service I would like to build. I'm not sure if I should go into detail because it's not fully unrelated to Remix. But I think it will be fun, and I hope we can get to a situation where, for example, MetaMask and of course all other wallets do not look like the one on the left here, but rather on the right, where you see which function you're calling and what it will do and what the parameters are. Okay, that's it. Thanks. If you want to have this needs a cooperation between people who are writing deployment tools, people who are working on wallets, and people are working on block explorers, and if you want to help in some way, also if you want to help working on this service that publishes stuff, please talk to me.
I have a question.
Yeah.
The information that is stored in IPFS includes the link and source code?
It is what?
The information that you store in IPFS includes the original source code?
Yes.
Yeah.
All
right, thanks. So, let's start talking about plugins on Remix. And
at CC, I think we did the first presentation about those plugins with the new interface. I hope you like the new interface if you haven't seen it yet. And we have a preview of the new logo of Remix, by the way, with Remix Desktop, so if you have it, this is quite new. And today, who here have built plugins in Remix already? Nice, great. So, for those who haven't, I just want to take 5 minutes to show you how easy it is to actually build the plugins with Remix. So I just want to be sure, do you hear me at the end? Yeah, perfect, great. I want to show you I'm doing it the right way, so I will clear local storage. Okay, there are everything here in my browser. Okay, that's good. Here, okay, I have a clean workspace. Okay, nothing here, no files. I will start running the clock, and after 5 minutes, you'll have a running plugin on my computer. Okay, so just for letting you, last time I did it, I failed, so I put a lot of pressure on me. Okay, so okay, let's go. So plugins on Remix work inside Knife Frame. So basically, what you need is an index.html file. So let's create it. You can try to do it at the same path as you want. I just created an index.html file because that's just the bottom of it. So what I'm going to do now, I'm going to go on github.com/ethereum/remix-plugin, which is the library we built to interact with Remix. So we have an npm package, but for the sake of the demonstration, I'm going to use a CDN. So here I will pass the CDN, I'll create a script, and go back to the documentation. And from here, it says that I need to create what we call a client, basically a class that's going to call to talk from the A-frame to Remix ID. So I'm doing that here, and then I'm going to create an async function called say hello. So my plugin is basically going to create a new file on Remix file system and display hello world, because yeah, that's the easiest thing to do. So for that, I'm going to look at the documentation again. So here you have everything that you need to know about this, and here you have all the native plugin that we expose. So here, which native plugin should I use to write something on the file system? Come on, time is running out. File manager, okay. Let's go. So I go there, and here I have all the methods that are exposed. I won't ask you this time. So first I need to wait that the client is actually loaded, and then I will do clients.call. This is to call the file manager, and then here I will give the method, which is set file. File is going to be inside browser/hello.txt, and it's going to say hello world. And then I'm going to do the same and just change the file so we can see it directly. So switch file. Hope I don't make a mistake here. Hello.txt. Perfect, and now I just need a button to trigger the function. And by default, we inject Bootstrap. So just for you to know, you don't even need to inject it, because we want every plugin to look the same. So just say hello. So now I will run npx live server, go back to Remix. Here inside File Manager, I can connect to a local plugin. And here I give the name of the plugin. It's a camera case, say hello. This is the display name, say hello. HTTP proposed 8080. Seems okay for me. Go to side panel. Okay. Here are my new plugins that arrived. It's arrived. I have my say hello with the bootstrap theme. I click here, ask me, because it's file system, you don't want to give access to everything here. I want to accept it, tells me, and accept it, bam! I did it. Yeah!
Wow.
Sorry?
You showed this time yet.
Now I have some experience, but this one I was working on it because last time was yes for me. Okay, so I really wanted to show you how easy it is to connect with this. Of course, this is a hello world, okay? You can use whatever framework you want. We have example with React, Vue, Angular, LeetElement, whatever you want. If you need more examples, we can build some for you to show you how it works. And also, with this plugin, you can call. So this is like all documentation, but all those are exposed by default. And we also have a new way, which is like external APIs. For example, we have this Freebox plugins built by Pierre-Louis here, and it exposes all the Freebox interface directly inside Remix. So even your plugins can extend the Remix API with this kind of thing. And I want to talk a little bit about this project. So everything about this plugin engine that we are building, I want to say that it's actually a two-layer of interoperability. So this is how it works right now. You have Remix IDE, you have the plugin engines that run inside it, and then you can plug any plugins you want. So it's like type of plugins. But what we really want to do, that's anyone, any project that wants to build decentralized application or IDE can use actually this plugin engine. And we made everything possible so that any project that has a web view, because it's still iframes, can integrate Remix engine. And we really want to make an open call to anyone that wants to try to use this plugin engine, please come to us. So like that, if you build the plugins, it's not going to work only on Remix, it's going to work on all the applications that are running this plugin engine. But if we go a little bit deeper, so that was the first step, application layer, but we want also to be able to have like an API layer, because if we have a wallet, we're going to have like a lot of wallets, right? So what we want to do is, we don't want the plugin developer to say, okay, I just want to my plugin to work with MetaMask or to with this wallet in specific. We want them just to say that I want to work with a wallet, and then it's up to the user to choose which wallet they want to use. And for that, we are working on a common API and common interface, so that it should be like totally agnostic for the user when they are to the developer plugins if they want to integrate to add a wallet like that. So the idea is that you can, of course, use MetaMask, but you could use also whatever wallet you want. And this is our next step, and we really appreciate any project that work on this kind of standardization of interfaces, because we really want to be able to accept a lot of different plugins and try to make it as interoperable as possible. So, thanks to you, and now I think this is Socrates plugin, so please welcome.
Where's
Hi guys, my name is Eddie, and Darko here will help me with the workshop part later on. Today the idea is to showcase Zocratis plugin. These amazing guys too have created Zocratis implementation itself, and we brought it to Remix so you can hack and play with it. Basically the idea is to make this the usage and the creation and the verification part as easy as possible. So you as a Solidity dev or dev that isn't familiar with zk-SNARKs in depth can use this and test it on the Remix plugin. So basically we are going to take a look at the user perspective here. What do you do? You actually write high level code, you compile that code, and what you get is a set of conditions or the flattening code. Next, we can have two steps, either setup or compute with test, but in this demo we are going towards setup. We generate this proof and a verification key, and then from that verification key you get the verification smart contract that we are going to deploy in JavaScript VM or inside Remix, and on the other side we can create a witness from the flattened code and so on, but I will show you that. Also, for those who want to track, you can open your laptops and just open Remix so we can test together this. So basically, let's go. It's a bit hard to track, but okay. So basically what we are going to do, we are going to activate three plugins. First one is Zocratis, the second one is Solidity Compiler, and the third one is deploy and reference sections. Oh, okay. Oh. Okay. Thank you. I have a special hostess here. Thank you for it. Big applause for him, please. So now when we activated this plugin, we are going to show you a simple example. So we are going to click on an example file, accept all that the Remix wants from us. So basically, I've probably given my kidney away, but it's okay. So here we have an example of the code. What this code does is actually pretty simple. You see this code. Is it okay from macro? Okay, awesome. So we have two fields, private field A and public field B. Private and public will be important later on. We'll say what that means. But basically, result is if A times A equals B, then it's 1, else it's 0. So basically, E squared is equal to B. And we'll see if that is true or not, or that is 0 or 1. So basically, the first step, as we mentioned before, is the compilation. So from this high-level code, we'll get a flattened set of conditions. We're going to use the compile, you get this. Basically, we can copy that bytecode or download it if you want to use it offline. This version is also compatible with CLI, so you can take this is what you generated here and move it to the CLI. Once we did this compilation, we got this flattened code. What we'll do next is the setup. I won't get into too much details now, so because I just want to show high overview, then we can later talk about what each step does. But what setup will create is two keys, verification and proving key. We are going to run that part, and here we can see that we gain two keys, that is proving and a verification key that we are going to use later on. So on this setup part, we have generated that. And the next step in this, if I'm going too fast, just stop me and ask me. So it's really, just do that. And on the next step, we are going to generate the Solidity contract from this verifier. I'm going to use API version 2 because it's the latest version and Zocratis is moving towards that, so we are going to use that. And we are going to do the export. What we just done here is we have created a Solidity contract that we can deploy and then verify using it. This is an average contract, and what we are going to talk about now is this verified transaction because it's important. So basically, here we've generated a contract that we are going to deploy, and we are going to send a proof and two uints to that contract. So input parameters and the proof itself. So let's deploy that to, let's first compile it, of course. It will take some time. I hope the internet is good. And once it's compiled, we are going to deploy it inside JavaScript VM. Is this too fast for you, or is this okay? Okay, awesome. So basically, we are going to take this contract verify and deploy it here. So here we have just one function, verify transaction, where we are going to input some stuff that we are going to generate in the next step. So basically, just to recap quickly, we had this high-level code which we compiled. We run the setup, which generated proving and a verification key, and from verification key with export verify, we gained this smart contract, which we deployed in our JavaScript VM. And now we are going to do this part on the left. So basically, on this part, compute witness does what it does is basically from this input argument, it generates the field that you can input values inside here, and as we can see, this is a private field. So private field A is private, and that would be important because of the privacy feature of the ZK snarks that in the next step we'll see how. So basically we'll say, can someone give me an example of which number square is some other number?
416.
416, okay, awesome. So 416 here. Oh, not 15, 16, yeah. Let's compute that. Okay, so basically witness is computed, and we are going to generate a proof now that we are going to use there. But first, let's open that proof, open it here, and we get something like this. So ZK snarks works that way, that these three points are elliptic curve points for ZK snark, and these are the inputs inside. As we have seen on the compute witness, we gain them here. Okay, this may be a bug, it's alpha, so sorry for that.
It's hexadecimal, sorry.
Ah, it's hexadecimal, okay, so yeah, that's okay then. So basically, yeah, I thought this was a bug. So basically, as we can see in the inputs, what we have here is only 10, which is 16, this B part, and we have 1, which is the result of the function. But we don't have 4 anywhere. Why? Because it's a privacy feature of the ZK snarks. So basically, we don't have to show the private fields in this proof to be able to verify the proof itself. So basically, that's it. And now we are going to take that generate proof, copy those parameters, take them here, and verify transaction. Let's run that. Let's wait a bit, it will take some time. Yeah, we can take guess profile, so we'll see about the guess. Yeah, it will pan a bit. Okay, awesome, it passed. Now let's open it. And we go down there to the coded input, and it says true, so we managed to verify the book. So basically, that's the short flow, the high overview of it. What would happen if, for example, if we did this? So four times four is 16, but what if we said that it's 9? What will happen? We can compute witness, we can generate the proof. Let's then again copy the parameters, and let's verify that transaction. Let's wait a bit to show you here on this part. It takes a lot of time, but it works. Basically, now we'll again verify that it's true. But what is actually true? We verified, as we can open this, let's open the remix editor, that 4 times 4 and 9 as result is not equal. So basically, we've again verified that we know the private fields of this. So basically, even if it doesn't satisfy, even if 4 times 4 isn't 9, if we say that it's invalid, then we verify this. So basically, you don't need to have, you know, it's not just arguments that that satisfy this condition are two, that are one, but also those that satisfy zero as a result can also be verification of this. So basically, that's it in short. You have any questions, or should I go into some detail in some spot? Yeah.
Does it show like a syntax highlighting, or like if there will be an error in the Socrates file itself?
Yeah, we can make an error. Let's
do it like this. So let's make result. That's the completion again, and this says that if our result is undefined and stuff like that, we can do something else.
But basically, you will get a line where it's the error. So basically, that's how the solution works. Yeah. Any other questions? Yeah.
Does this run inside Remix, or are you conducting an external?
Yeah, it's a completely inside Remix. It's WASM based, so it's all inside Remix.
Socrates is written in Rust, so you can compile that to WebAssembly.
Yeah, that's right. There is one version that is CVI, it's multi-threaded, and CVI uses multi-threaded version, and this is simpler because it's in JavaScript. So basically, this is a bit slower, but it's more user-friendly, and for this kind of testing, it's pretty good. Okay, any more questions?
Yeah, you get how much gas?
Oh, okay. Let's have gas for fun, or gas.
It's also tried with optimizer.
Yeah, we have running. Debugger plugin. Okay. Yeah, probably add some gas. Which one needs to activate also? Debugger plugin. Oh, again. Yeah, 567,000, so yeah.
You're good.
Yeah, that's okay, yeah.
And fun fact, it's going to be much better after Istanbul, so we see basically a third of it as a cost down.
That's basically it. If you have any more questions, feel free to ask us later on, and thank you guys.
Thanks very much. Now we have two items left. We'll talk about the Remix Workshop plugin with Chris Wong. And then we can switch to the brainstorm session, where we talk about how to create a Remix list and how to add more socialization on our plugins.
Okay.
But first workshop. Yeah. It's time to set them.
One thing we're going to try and do with the foundation a lot more over the next, between here and next DevCon, is a lot more focus on education and onboarding and documentation. Probably for a lot of people in this room, this may or may not be so important, but if we want to do what Joe Lubin described as the next million devs, then it is very important. So one thing I've always been a big fan of is documentation that people can also interact with. And that's kind of what the workshop plugin lets you do. So this is somewhat limited right now, but there is this new workshop plugin you can activate from the homepage too. And we will start adding curated workshops to this, but also you can create your own. This is where we see the internet is. You can either manually create them by adding steps and then linking to files, and I'll show you the structure of that in a minute. But that's a little bit tedious. So one of the other steps now is to import right from GitHub and follow a certain pattern. And that's what I'll quickly show you. So in the Solidity documentation is this introduction to smart contracts example. And one thing I tried to do was recreate this as a workshop plugin. And if you ever used any kind of interactive education tool before, then you have things like, I'll show you very quickly. Description, the code to play around with, and then you test what you've done, and if it's correct, you go to the next step. If it's wrong, it tells you what's wrong, you fix it, etc., etc. This is currently using the kind of error handling feature of Solidity, things like require an assert. So we can't test at the moment, but Francois has promised me we're going to look at other ways to figure out how to test some of that stuff. For example, in this smart contract example, it tells you about the Pragma version. We need to figure out a way to test that, for example. And it basically looks like something like this. This gets too slow, I'll switch to a local copy. Each step is defined in a folder, and the file name is important, especially if you want to import from GitHub, because then it will just match all the files it needs from that file name. And if I jump into one that is a little bit more, has everything in there, you'll see a markdown file which contains the text. The text you just saw.
Could you please increase a little bit the size?
But it's also tiny here. I can barely see what I'm reading. So. Is that better? There we go. So there's a markdown file that has the explanation. And one thing I will say for anyone who's interested in this, writing, converting like normal documentation to something like this that's very bite-sized is actually really, really hard. So actually possibly the hardest bit of this is figuring out how to explain in very few words concepts in that side panel. And I wouldn't say this is still too long. It probably needs a bit more work, but it's actually quite difficult. And then you have the basic Solidity file. Don't forget, this should be the Solidity file without the thing that you want people to add. So it's kind of its current state. And then here is the test. And at the moment we have a little bit of a, we need to figure out how to test this properly because the explanation maybe introduces some concepts so you have something to test because you need something to test, which isn't always what you have when you're trying to educate. So this is things we're still trying to figure out. But if you have done any kind of error handling in Solidity, then this is reasonably familiar. The import file at the top is added by remix. So if you're using an editor, you'll keep getting errors about it, but it will get added eventually. And that's pretty much it. So actually just creating the content is probably the most complicated part of the whole thing. And then you get an interface, much like you saw, with the steps that people can work their way through and complete a course, or complete a small workshop. And we have been testing this, and Rob is going to run a workshop using this in Paris in about a month as well. So we tried it at Berlin as well, and it works quite well. So if you have tutorials you would love to add in, please do, and let us know. Or you can add them yourself and just run them. And this sort of fits into a lot of other things we're trying to do. I don't know if any of you saw in Aya's keynote, there was a little thing about studio.ethereum. Dodo, coming soon. That's actually a similar product to Remix that was built by a team in Spain called Superblocks. And that adds the ability to also test things like the HTML and Web3 JS JavaScript to build a full stack DA. But the nice thing is, both of them are using Markdown and smart contracts, and then HTML and JavaScript in the case of Superblocks. So we can actually share content between them as well. And with the plugin infrastructure, the eventual aim in the long run will be to hopefully kind of make one plugins of others sort of thing. So it's basically the same tool with extras on top. So yeah, that's just some of the things we're working on in terms of some interactive education tools. And hopefully in the future, we might also be able to make this embeddable somehow. I don't know. So it can actually be directly in the documentation too. So yeah, please give it a go. We know there are some limitations right now, but it's certainly something to try and experiment with and figure out how to teach people the wonderful world of Solidity program. So, thank you very much.
Thanks. So now, let's move to the brainstorm session with Rob here. So basically now we want to discuss, and I think it should be like an open discussion. So I would like you guys all to just raise your hands, and if you want to come, you can also come here. To just exchange stuff and share ideas together. And the starting point of the discussion is about plugins, and to see whether we need to keep it centralized, not centralized, and how we should then govern this, and what will be the brokers, and etc. So, yeah, please, Alex, you want to go? Edson?
I think like it should be like everyone should be part of it. I'm not sure.
Please just come up here and then talk with us, please.
So then I pose a question back, like why does it need governance in the beginning, right? Is it better just to have in the beginning just like a central trusted server with a few plugins?
Yeah, that's a good question, but I'm not sure I'm the right one to answer that. But I would say that you say it's the beginning, and I kind of thought it is not the beginning, and for me it was the right time to move to decentralized governance. But it looks like you think, and you're right, that we need to wait more, and that's basically it's not the right time. So,
Maybe you can explain what
we're
discussing now. Okay,
so I think I just introduce the thing. So we have this Remix plugin framework now, and which means that any developer can propose plugins and can develop plugins. That's the case of Eddie for the Socrates plugin, and that's the case of Edson here for the Desk Provider plugin. And so we know those guys, that's fine. So it's fine for us to have Remix, to have their plugin inside Remix. But if there is multiple people like coming and saying, okay, we want also to have this plugin, and we have this developed this plugin, and we want to have it in Remix.
And we're doing all this push to have make everyone do a plugin, but are you doing a good plugin, or is it just a silly one, or is it a malicious one, or is it a...
I have a question.
That's a question.
So, like, is Remix eating its own plugin dog food? Like, the Solidity compiler, is that what Remix is using? Or are you using the Solidity compiler plugin when you're compiling?
Yeah. So, basically, we have a bunch of plugins made by us. Like, SDOM plugin, Adjusted plugin, and we made this plugin. So,
yeah. Right.
I would just...
That was your question, Joe.
Yeah.
So, just to...
to Alex's question, I mean, given that it's in early stages, you want a refined list of plugins that actually work. Because the last thing that you want is a long list of things that do not work, and that's how no one can decide what to use. So we definitely need in day one, I would say, governance, just like with Ethereum. You can't just send free transactions, you need a cost with it. And then this cost is probably associated with governance more than anything else. I do have a technical question, if it's okay. It's not related to the governance aspect. But one thing we're trying to add to our plugin is a field. So we have a get point, and the get point in the transaction accepts another field beyond what's defined in the regular transaction format that you have. So from to, we added an extra field that gets stripped out before it's sent to public mail. So is there a way to create a plugin that allows us to do that?
Right now I would say no, because I think it's something that's done directly inside Remix code, source code. So this is one thing that we're trying to do is, for us still a concept, this plugin engine. We wanted to be sure that it's worth spending time on that, and I think it is because we have a lot of developers that are interested into it. But as you say, most of the plugins are fake plugins right now because they're just like the file system, for example, and stuff like that is directly inside the code of Remix. And we need time to remove it and try to improve this kind of thing.
So
it's going to be possible, but right now it's not.
But Zaccrates now, it's also part of the Remix code?
No, this is a new one.
So that's an external plugin, and that's what I'm thinking, correct?
Yeah.
I want to develop an external plugin that allows me to customize the list of fields that are being passed through.
But run transaction is still native, and we should probably extract this out so you can use it. But we don't have it now.
I think this conversation we're having right now is really interesting. It shows you that people actually want more API.
Yeah.
How do you govern that?
Yeah, that's actually a good question. This something that we are doing right now. We have opened a GitHub repository where we put all the common API that we have right now. Our goal, as I explained, is like to have common APIs. And this is actually more difficult than I thought at the beginning because there are already a lot of softwares. And the only standard API that I know right now is like the Web3 provider, which is the only thing on file system because you just know it. But everything else is like super difficult to know. And we need like working groups of people from the industry to talk about that. But still, we need to not just talk, we need to produce something because you have this kind of issues. So the way we are doing right now is just taking the current API from Remix and exposing it, just like that. And but I think it needs to be curated at some point. So always the same proof of concept, and then we try to make it more standard as much as possible with all the people.
Yeah. So we prefer, of course, like just a thought here. I prefer, even though there's others that might want to ask for new APIs, I prefer to send the news. The same sent transaction, but customize the fields that can be passed through, because that makes it compatible with all of the other clients and IDs, and we don't need to create something custom. Especially if you have also an external API that's using it or other applications, then you don't have to create them.
Yeah, I have an opinion on that. I guess it would be nice to have to define a certain rules. If for instance, I want to extend certain API, let's say I'm using TypeScript, and I want to extend the types, so probably define certain rules or guidelines to do it easily.
Yeah, so what kind of guidelines do you expect? Like something that's like inside, that checked before putting it on, before exposing the plugin, or is it at runtime, or is it just guidelines on the documentation?
Just for instance, if I'm a plugin creator, and then someone else is coming to create another plugin, and he wants to look into the code of my plugin. So everyone has different ways of doing certain things, but if you start like educating people, okay, you want to extend the types, or you want to do something else, you can do it in this way. So the mental model of the next person is going to be the same, that he's going to know what you're doing.
I have a question. How do you do it internally in your team when you propose new API or new changes? Like, for example, this entire plugin system, how did you create a proposal and then you discuss it in your team? And
no, basically it was like more, we take, as I explained, take the code that's currently used and we just export it.
No, I mean, internally, how did you communicate that you're going to do this?
It's not, for the API, it's more like, for example, it's sort of made as a profile thing. And at some point, you will need to access debugging information, right? So we told us, okay, I want to be able to get the trace, to have a new API for getting the trace. So we just say, okay, so we can just extract this stuff from our code, and then we will make an API for you to have access to it. I mean, it's more like if one dev, one plugin dev wants a new API, we just see if it makes sense to have it, and then
okay.
So it's still very centralized.
Centralized ad hoc.
I know it's centralized, but you, when you're project management, you create a little sub-project for that? And how do you summarize what you want to do?
It's not that formal. It's more like, what do we need right now?
Are you going to be able to do this if you open it up? Like, if you open it up to the more community?
Is that the point?
And they're going to sit there and communicate with you. You're going to be in chat with them all the time, emails. And then you're going to make promises, or you're going to get... organize our proposals, like make a proposal. We'd like this proposal to comment, modify the proposal. You have to create more process.
Like creating a branch on the GitHub, see if people want to comment the branch. And
that kind of thing.
And
whatever, yeah. I mean, we shouldn't solve it now, but you have to know that the more people you have involved, the more structure.
You can ask the plugin dev to like stake some ether and the community can slash it.
That could fund security review. Yeah.
Actually, yesterday we were speaking about it. One of the things that Jan mentioned is like, okay, let's say I'm a developer. You go, you create a proposal, I want to create, I have this idea. So people can come, they can vote. Let's say automatically you assign a budget from Bitcoin, a bounty or something. So you start with the plugin. But one of the things that I mentioned was, what about the long-term maintenance? What is going to happen if this thing isn't working? So I like the idea about staking something. Maybe you can even tokenize a plugin and people can donate, things like that.
Yeah, but again, you don't want to create a huge thing to govern for governance to govern like 50 plugins or 100 plugins, right? So it only starts making sense when you're talking about tens of thousands of plugins. Because if you have like under 1,000 plugins, you probably can just use social functions. Just in the sense of like, I trust him to review, I trust her to review, or things like that.
Maybe you should look at what others are doing for plugins. Like there is a plugin for Aragon, Yao, and Grid also use plugin.
For them, it's also is very internal. And I think we've reached the point that now we really need to know how. Because right now, if you want to add a plugin, you need to do a pull request on Remix ID. And we are trying to switch to something more. External from us, so now you can just do pull requests in another repository, so it doesn't touch our code. So it's like first thing to extract from Remix ID. But at some point we need to find a way have to validate everything. That's how do we do that?
Yes, you can use a plugin without registering it, right? So if I like publish one, and I just like didn't register it, I should be guys through this.
Can you load it by load local plugin?
You can use it locally, but you can't.
Does that be localhost or can I connect to like any URL?
No, and you can
anything.
But then it's more like for dev proposals, where you want to develop something. And
yeah, because otherwise, every time you refresh, you have to continue with your own idea.
But I think if I may say something here, that I kind of see that. So we started working on this plugin last year, just after DevCon 4. And then, basically I thought that it would have taken less time to reach the point where we need to have this more centralized. And yeah, I think it's a question of timing. It's, for me, it was a time to push this as we more centralized. But it looks like we have now 15 plugins.
What's that like to your team to have 15 plugins to worry about?
Sorry?
What is it like for your team with 15 plugins? Is it a lot of work to review all that stuff? Like, what is that doing to your team?
Yeah, I mean,
how much work is that?
Basically, EG is doing the Socrates plugin. At the moment, we don't review it. Because it's written, it's alpha version. We know it's not ready yet.
So for my part, I'm maintaining 5 plugins, and it's already a lot of work. And I review also this plugin, which is not even written. I mean, it's written in React. I don't know so much React. So you know, like, this kind of issues that we've got, and a lot of people, I don't know what framework are using
React
to, okay, right? But yeah, if we have pipeline is written in Vue. It's huge code base. So it's super difficult for us to manage, maintain this kind of thing. And each time there is a new update, we need to review again. Because we don't want that these new updates will bring some new...
Every time they upgrade.
Yeah, so it's probably a question.
Is it possible to make the ID in a way that the plugins are sitting in a separate repository, and then anyone can just get the remix and then just install the plugins? But then you don't need to maintain any plugins if it's that architecture. You just have a remix, someone gets the plugin, there is a plugin repository, then you don't need even to govern anything. So people are just willingly choosing whatever plugins they want to install. And then those things are going away.
So do you expect people to go to the repository and look at the code and say, okay, this is the good code?
No,
I don't expect them to do that.
I expect people to just have a look into this, like if it's like a highly valued or whatever the team has created and they trust this team, this is up to the whoever is going to use this plugin to decide do they want to use it or not. So basically there is no a single point of deciding. So there are different signals, I don't know.
Don't you use a few cures for that?
Cures.
Like 2 weeks for validation of the plugins, jurors, iterating, and then if it's good, then the plugin is used in your remix. I mean, it's made public.
Yeah. And how can... So if I want to be part of...
Jurors?
Yeah, how
you have to engage, Ether. So, if the case is... I mean, I'm not an expert of Jurors, but I think it could be an idea to deal with this mass needing of reviewers, because reviewers are earn money when they do and vote for the good outcome of the case. So it could be a balance between to have less work for you.
I have a question. So I see, what is the trend model, right? Because I see two types of bad plugin, right? The first one is just a plugin that breaks, remix, it doesn't work, and it sucks, makes everything slow, it's just a bad thing, and only affects me. The second trend model is a bad plugin that actually changes the source code of the contract when it's deployed. But then you could argue that you should not use a code, the final thing that you should trust is the contract that is on the on Etherscan, right? On the blockchain. You should go there and verify there, right? So that's it shouldn't matter. So my point is, if you make a contract, publish it on the blockchain, then you should verify the source code there, not in your Remix local thing.
But
thing the problem I see there, you in some plugins have access to file system, and I, for example, use Socrates, activate that plugin and change some that I can access the file system, I can be malicious to the host computer, and that's a big problem. So that you can test, because you can test source code of plugin, you can test how it works, but integration with other plugins or malicious stuff like that, that's hard to test. That's the biggest problem.
Yeah, go ahead.
In this area, it seems like we're still not clear on which APIs we're going to enable, what sort of features we're going to enable. since in early stages. So before we start thinking about the threat model that we need to protect against, we probably need to define all of the features, at least a good number of features that we want to introduce and start building, and then we can start thinking how we're going to protect against malicious plugins.
I was going to say it depends a lot on what the plugins can actually do and what they have access. Even if it's limited right now, I think in the future it's going to be more and more, because even things like the wallet might make sense to expose it, because there might be some plugins that do need access to it to implement some sort of functionality in the future. And the threat model that really worries me is what we see in ecosystems like Chrome plugins and things like that, which is a plugin that gets really, really popular, and someone just goes to the developer with a lot of cash and says, I want to buy it. And the developer just transfers. And then in the next update, there's like there's a malware inserted. I think this kind of thing that it's not really about if it's, you know, thousands of plugins. If it's like 50, or it's already a lot for us to be able to review all that there, every update and check what's if there's anything malicious that was introduced. Finding a solution for that is a very interesting problem.
That's also about the version, about
yeah, so yeah. Basically now we are just, so before you can just update as you want, because we're just on the CDN. So now we are tradition on Swarm, so we have to set the, IKFS, so we have the hash, so each time you update, this is a new hash, so at least we can know that the version is different, but just a way of warning people, it's not, don't go farther than that, yes.
Do you have a roadmap, like the concepts of monetizing those obsolete, high quality plugins?
We don't. We don't have any roadmap right now.
For monetizing, you mean for...
Like building a marketplace for those kinds of plugins.
I think the monetizing is up to each plugin. For example, Mythix plugin has a freemium version. Or you can log in if you have paid, you have access to more functionalities.
So it's possible already now, you mean?
Yeah, I mean, this is an iframe, right? You can do whatever you want, right? It's just that we don't say if you pay that much of Ether or if you didn't select that much of Ether, you don't have access to the plugin, right? Everything is decentralized. You just can use it. You can even get the source code and you can do it locally. You don't need to bring it for that. So we want to manage the monetization. I mean, it's not on our roadmap for sure. And I don't think we are going to do this. We won't have. Yes.
I don't know if anyone said it, but I looked at Remix a long time ago, and that's a significant upgrade from where it was. So
yeah. We'll really hope that you can help us making it better. And
absolutely.
Yeah, that's why we run for this discussion today, because it's something that we want to increase, like speaking with the community and know what you expect. And I really heard your point about having more view on what we're going to do, and your point to make it more organized, because right now it's like we put our concept, right?
Do you think the point about making it more organized could just help us figure out what's an important plugin to put in the list? Or is that just...
I think it's to create structure to the process, then you can start create rules for the process. There's just too much of an open, fluid conversation about what people want, and you know, different communication channels for that. It can be difficult. And so you look at, say, the EIP process, or you look at, I'm not sure how, like for example, like Apple Store, like there's all these very formal steps and pipelines to these processes. So you might learn from that. Coming from an outsider, because I'm not inside your team, I don't know. And that applies to both API and when people submit requests to your project, right? Like, what principles are you using to evaluate that for API changes and the plugin participation?
The point of, so we have this repository, like Redis-plugins.j2-test-repository. And the point is just for people to propose APIs and to reach the point where we will not be just citing all the API and everything. And for me, I kind of think, I think it's a good thing, but at the same time, it will slow down everything.
Sure.
Then we have to wait hours and weeks for API to be approved or whatever.
Bureaucracy.
Like for the API.
Yeah, Europe is a bureaucracy.
But at the same time, we have to do that.
But if I know, it's okay until you hit a threshold of
business. So my point of view and personal is now is a good time to build like a working group with some few people outside of Remix. We can start having work on what should be added, the roadmap, on this kind of thing. On we can work on this repository, this place where we can all, and this GitHub, so every developer know how it works. And yeah, right now, and also have like discussion, like every 2 weeks or something like that, I think a call to know where we are going and this kind of thing. I know that we've seen the guys from Microsoft today, and they really want to do that also because they might want to use this inside VS Code. So if you want to be part of this working group that we're starting to build, please come and see us just after that, so we can organize this.
Working group can be like a ring in like ETH Magicians and ETH Research. Like
yeah, it could be also a ring to Magicians,
because,
which would
like
be nice,
yeah.
But focus on this subject. And maybe you have better experience than me. What would be the best like amount of people to manage at our very early stage?
It's difficult with working groups because people might be enthusiastic at first and then they might move on to other projects. The team really needs like a good organizer to constantly look after it and keep it going. And constantly ping the members and have phone call or conference calls and chat, things like that. Yeah, as you know, like this your community of people who are giving you feedback. You need an organizer.
What do you think, Nick? So you are doing this SPM plan.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about it? What is your feedback?
I mean, in SPM, I can stop someone from. So we have like a federated registry, so model where everyone maintains their own on-chain registry. So there's no like one central registry. So it's trust is like all of it. It's like I can't prevent anyone from releasing a malicious package. So it's just like the user has to trust the registry they're interacting with, and that's it. I don't expect you guys to maintain the security of the plugins I interact with. Like that's on me. I expect you guys more like if there's a broken one, I'd rather you guys like pull it or something. But if there's a malicious one, then like,
yeah,
I should know.
Yeah, but what's the mechanism of knowing that?
Yeah.
Like we should help each other knowing
better.
Or just be like metadata, like who maintains it, like give me a link to their GitHub or something.
Give me a link to
or like their Twitter handle. You know, like in this space everyone knows. Like if there's something random.
Just have report with them.
We can improve UI report directly from the link.
Yeah. But for you guys to review every plugin
is
absurd.
How do you get someone to review it? I mean, someone needs to review it. You're right. I consider you're right in the value zone. Like there are people using your tool to deploy family assets, corporate assets.
If you don't know how to interact with blockchain, then like.
Well, people don't.
Well, yeah.
Users don't. We're putting huge value on this stuff. You have to assume the user isn't a total expert, because they can just open up your tool, copy paste something, and put a multi-sig in there, and put the whole family.
Well, then put like a warning or something that, guys, we have not reviewed this. If you don't know what you're doing, like go get someone who knows.
Yeah, exactly. For the beginning, I would suggest a combination of what we have now and what Pro basically was suggesting. So there would be maybe two buckets. Like one bucket is the trusted plugins for now. And then the other bucket would be like go and experiment on your own risk. maybe even two, three of them, I don't know, with the time, but still, it could be a good start payment.
With red titles.
Yeah. Any style you would prefer.
I'd also maybe changing the subject slightly for the last couple of minutes. Also wanted to have a session of people coming up with ideas for plugins.
Yeah.
You know, plugins, like if there's a developer experience problem in the ecosystem that you think might be solved with a plugin.
Can I change the font?
Yeah,
that's a theme.
But that doesn't require a plugin? Or
yeah, it's a theme is a plugin.
Okay.
So it's not, it doesn't expose, like, add a new theme yet, but do it for request on our
region. That's like my font I like.
Yeah, also think that fonts.
I want to have a right panel, in the right side a panel.
On the right side?
Yeah, yeah. Right now you can only position the plugin in the left side and the bottom. But one idea that I have is I really would like to have a real-time storage visualizer. So like I'm writing a contract plugin and I can immediately see how it's structured, like the slots and the binding.
So
I mean, I think for learning purposes would be really useful so people can immediately see what is happening.
We just change the UI and you want us to go back to the previous one.
No.
I see, I see.
No, I mean, I
see.
Ability to
yeah.
I think it's, we have 3 minutes.
Yeah,
3 minutes.
Okay. And you have some,
I just think
wish
this
is your time, man.
There is like the story useful for this kind of stuff. Using Trellis.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and if there is an update of version, for example, this stuff you were saying, like, not verified yet, you can still use the previous versions of the plugins which are verified through demos.
Nice.
Confirmed.
Yes?
Making it, like, close to be a full IDE, like a desktop version with configuration files, with, like, being able to use it in, like, a in some way that it can be configured and then the whole team is just using the IDE like an easily, because now it's more like a web-based one, which like I'm mostly using as if I need to experiment on something. But we are not able to switch to Remix completely for our like code development because of like, I'm not sure what is it now like at the state, but like having a configuration file for an IDE, which includes some like perfect, for example, check for a soul cover, etc., etc. Is it possible now with Remix or not? I'm not sure. Like,
yeah, it is. But it is. So I think we should discuss. Basically, the thing is that Remix was used like 2 years ago as a learning platform, and it turns out that many people use it for like deployment, just for you.
Can I use a Solium like a plugin and then have a configuration file on my like disk and then the Remix will read this configuration file?
Not yet.
Mm-hmm.
But
no,
not definitely you can have like a plugin and then you can, I mean you could with RemixD connect to
but that's already like,
I know it's a lot of
That's what I mean. It's like a complicated like a setup going through the RemixD to get.
Yeah.
I think it would be.
But the
like
thing is also
friendly.
To have access to the file system. But again, there is a lot of issues if Remix has access to the file system and we expose it in the plugin API. Then it's not like just changing the code before deploying things. It's like changing the file system of the user with an issue.
With VS Code.
Yes, but I don't know what are the security in VS Code for that. And
they also have plugins. They have a review system on plugins.
They don't have wallets.
They don't, but they are using the Remix for like a solid like a contract development. So
yeah, but that's the kind of thing we have to discuss with them.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah, like version control would be quite useful.
Yeah.
When I look at that, you know, you write some contract, then you go to GitHub and you change it there, or you have to go to local ID to change
it. Yeah. She's 6 months that she wants that.
Okay.
But perfect, thanks.
The issue itself is 3 years old or something like that, right?
Yeah.
The issue itself is 3 years old or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Tell him to live for
okay, great.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.